Coming, welcome. We begin tape number 5 about Chinuch HaBonim and Be'ezus Hashem after Yom Tov. We're making the shiur into a weekly, tentatively Monday nights at 8:30 until further notice. But this will be the last shiur until after Yom Tov. And being that it's right after Shabbos Shuvah, and we're right in the middle of the Yomim HaNoiroyim, we're going to discuss Chinuch HaBonim as it relates to one of the important themes of the Yomim HaNoiroyim. We all know that it takes a lot of skill and a lot of effort and a lot of know-how to be a good parent. And just like anything else that takes skill, it's something that needs to be learned. And learns from people that already have that knowledge, from Rabbeim, and from proper role models, and from the Torah and the Svarim. As Yidden, we don't need the parental role models that the Umos HaOlam have come up with. We don't need Dr. Spock's works, or any of those other things. For in terms of a role model, we were provided with the most perfect role model for a parent that's possible. And when I say perfect, I mean with a capital P, because I'm talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is described as the father of all Jews. Bonim Atem LaHashem. You were all children of Hashem. The Rambam says that all Jews are brothers. And if you want to know why they're brothers, says the Rambam, where does it say that all Jews are brothers? He says, well, if you're all Bonim Atem LaHashem, if you're all children of the same father, then that makes you brothers. The relationship that we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is described as a relationship of a father to his children. In fact, the Gemara says, Bizman she Yisrael oisin ritzoyne shel makayim, when the Jews are fulfilling Hashem's will, keruyim bonim, they're called children of Hashem. Which just shows us, for anything else, how kadosh and how important and how high and lofty is the relationship between a father and his children. If when the Jews are doing the Ratzon Hashem, when the Jews are tzaddikim, their relationship with Hashem is described as one of father to children. It could have been described as Rebbe to Talmidim. It could have been described as any way. But the Torah describes it as a relationship between father and children. And we know that when the Jews are doing Ratzon Hashem Mokim, that's the greatest, most kadoshtika relationship in the world. And that is the nimshel, the marshal for it is kruyim bonim. Jews are called children. This is why on Yomim HaNoiroyim we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu Rachameinu to have Rachmonis on us, but not just to have Rachmonis on us stam. There's a certain type of mercy we ask Hashem to have, and that's Rachameinu Kirachem Oval Bonim. Have mercy on us the way a father has mercy on a child. And we say, Im kabonim, im kaavodim. If we do your will, then we're bonim. Have rachmonis on us like bonim. If we don't do your will, bizman she'ein Yisrael oisin ritzayna shel mokayim, the Gemara continues, when the Jews are not doing the will of Hashem, kruyim avodim. They're called slaves. So we're either children or slaves. On the holiest, highest level, it's children. And when there's something wrong with the relationship, we're called avodim. Right here we have to ask. If somebody were to ask you what the opposite of a child is, they're giving you an IQ test. Opposite. They ask you what the opposite of black is and you say white. The opposite of warm and you say cold. If they ask you what's the opposite of bonim, what would you say? Well, maybe strangers, people who aren't related, maybe fathers. You say sons, the opposite is the father, maybe. But nobody would say The opposite of sons is slaves. And yet that's what's happening here. Either children, either sons or slaves. If somebody were to ask you what the opposite of a slave is, you'd say a free man. You say the opposite of a slave is a son? Slaves and sons are not even a contradiction to each other. They're not even exclusive of each other. And the Kedusha slave, he asks the Kasha, that why indeed is it when the Jews are not doing the will of Hashem, they're called Avodim? What Avodim? They should be called Rishoyim, evildoers, bad people. Why Avodim? If they lose the title of Bonim, why are they left with Avodim? And in here, Rabbi Isai, lies the crux of the matter. In here lies the basis, the foundation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's relationship to us as a father to a son. Because that's what we're going to be studying tonight. Hashem's relationship to us as a father to a son. And from Hashem's relationship, we're going to use it as a role model to see how we should act as parents. And in order to understand this, we have to start way back from the beginning. And from the beginning, I mean Mamish, the Aleph Beis of Torah. The story in the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos, where a ger, the convert, came to Hillel and asked Hillel to teach him the entire Torah while standing on one foot. Hillel accommodated that request, stood up on one foot, and said, I'll teach you the whole Torah. And that is as follows. What is hateful to you, don't do to somebody else. That's the whole Torah. The rest is just application. The rest is just details. But that's the entire Torah. Rashi explains that when Hillel said, what's hateful to you, don't do to somebody else, that somebody else that Hillel was referring to means Hashem. What's hateful to you, said Hillel to the ger, don't do to Hashem. Don't treat Hashem the way you would not want to be treated. And the Mefarshim explain what this means. Let's say that I were to find out Ma'ahurei HaPargud from a neighbor of yours that overheard you in a secret conversation with your best friend that you needed parnasa. You were having money problems. And I came to you and I said, my friend, I heard you're having money problems. Here, this is from me to you. And I pull out of my pocket a check for $1 million and I give it to you in your hand. No questions asked. $1 million. And you're sitting there, and your mouth is gaping open with your chin lying on the floor, and you can't believe that this is real. But it's real. $1 million, because I'm such a Baal Chesed. A couple weeks later, I meet you in a street, and I just parked my car. I parked by a meter, and I don't have a quarter. And I see you passing by, and I come over to you, and I say, my friend, can you give me a quarter for the meter? So I said, you say, I don't lend out money. I don't lend out money. So I would feel quite hurt and quite betrayed at that gross display of ingratitude. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who gives us, let's say, eyes, gives us two eyes, that are worth how much? How much would you sell your eyes for? If somebody would come over to you and said they need, let's say, an eye transplant, and they asked you to sell them your eyes, how much would you sell your eyes for? Would you sell it for $1 million? I don't think so. They're priceless. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you those eyes. And he asks you in return not to look in certain places. That's all he asks. Hashem gives you ears and says, don't speak Lashon Hara. He gives you an arm and asks you to put on tefillin. He gives you a house, and all he wants is a mezuzah. The entire Torah, Hillel is saying, is gratitude to Hashem for what he gives us. And Hillel said that this contains the entire Torah, this statement of V'ahavta l'reacha kamoicha. What he meant was, this is the motive for which the fulfillment of the entire Torah should be. This is the motive for fulfilling the Torah. How, what exact mitzvah do you have to do? What exactly is Hashem asking of you in return? That's the perish, those are the details. But this is the whole Torah. A person walks down the street in gratitude to Hashem for everything that Hashem gives. A very important principle. It's not for now, it's not for here. We should speak about this for weeks and weeks and weeks. It's a whole different attitude and perspective on life. Since I promised to speak about Chinuch HaBonim, I'm going to stick to that topic. We see from here that the Torah, the mitzvahs, are, so to speak, a repayment to Hashem for what He gives us in this world, a form of gratitude. The more we take from this world, the more obligated we are, therefore, in gratitude to Hashem. Therefore, the Gemara says in Masechet Pesachim that an Am Haaretz, an ignoramus, is forbidden to eat meat. Because an ignoramus, somebody who doesn't learn Torah, only pays back to Hashem the minimal. So he's only allowed to take the minimal. Reb Simcha Zissel Ziv Zatzal once said that this world is like a very expensive motel. Hotel. Ever walk into an expensive hotel, say the New York Hilton, and you sit in the lounge and you order a Coke. So what does a Coke cost? 75 cents, maybe a dollar in an expensive place. You go into the New York Hilton and you order a Coke. Well, the last time I ordered a Coke in the New York Hilton, a little before I was married, it was $6.50. Who knows how much it is now? Simcha Zissel Ziv once said that this world is like an expensive hotel. If you take something, you have to pay. And payment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in the form of Torah and Mitzvahs. And of course, Reb Simcha Zissel, notwithstanding, however much we repay to Hashem, it doesn't compare to what He gave us. We always get the better of the deal. The Hilton makes a lot of profit on my Coke. But we always get the better of the deal, because no matter where we focus our eyes, it's still a very good bargain. These two organs that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us in our eye sockets, compared to what we have to give in return. And so, if you think along these lines, when Rosh Hashanah comes about, there's a din v'cheshbin happening. And the din v'cheshbin is, Hashem looks down at us, and He says, I gave you this year all of these things. I gave you water, I gave you food. I gave you your house, I gave you your eyes and your hands and your everything you have. What did you pay back? You owe me. No. Maybe somebody paid back everything, but highly doubtful. And we ask Hashem to be moichalos for those aveiros that we do, which is the same as going to the butcher and asking him to extend some more credit when the bill comes in. The bill comes in from the meat market, and you call up the butcher and you say, please, I don't have anything now. That's what we tell Hashem. When Rosh Hashanah comes, we say, we promise to pay. I didn't pay up now, extend credit a little more. Comes the next year, extend credit a little more. And the next year, and the next year, and the next year. Until it comes to a point, Rabbeisai, where there's a halacha that takes effect. Do you know what the halacha is? Do you know what we used to do to people that would not or could not pay their debts that they incurred? We sold them. We sold them as slaves. If a person can't pay his chayv, he sells himself as a slave and he works and makes it back. And so eventually it comes to the point by HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we multiply and multiply and multiply our debt to the point where it's just not in the cards that we're going to pay back. And so what happens? Zman she'ein Yisrael oisin ritzayno shel makayim keruyim avodim. We get sold. We get sold, body and soul. In the piyut Lekel Oirech Din, it says, Lekel Oirech Din, Lekoine avodov badin. HaKadosh Baruch Hu acquires his servants, his avodim, in din. How does HaKadosh Baruch Hu acquire his servants in din? It's very simple. Comes Rosh Hashanah, comes the din, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings the bill. There's nothing to pay back, there's no money in the bank accounts, it's just not going to happen. Boom! Koinei avodov badin. That's what it means. We say every day in Shmoneh Esrei, Hashem is goimel chasodim toivim v'koinei hakoil. Hashem gives out very good chasodim, very good favors, and He acquires everything. What does it mean? Now if you look in the Siddur HaGrah, there's a perish called Siach Yitzchak, where he says that because Hashem gives out tremendous favors, therefore He acquires everything. But he doesn't explain what he means. This is what he means. Because Hashem gives out chasodim toivim, therefore we have to pay back. And because we don't pay back, He is koinei hakoil. Hashem acquires everything. Goimel chasodim toivim v'koinei hakoil. That's what it means. It's a very difficult thing to enter into a business relationship with Hashem, because very few people really pay back. And it has to be that way. Because if you take something, you have to give something back in return. So what's the Eitzah? What's the solution to this problem? Who can say that they're going to pay back, that they do pay back, that they can pay back, that they will? Well, there's one type of relationship in this world. No matter how much you give and give and give and give, you don't expect the other person to pay back nothing. And that's the relationship between a father and his children. Parents do for their children. The services that they render and the products that are given can never ever be paid back. Just imagine, by the chasana, after the father walks the kid down to the chuppah, and he finishes with the chuppah, so now the father gives the child a bill. For every diaper that was changed, for every bowl of oatmeal that was provided, for every article of clothing, for room and board for these 25 years, just imagine what that bill would come out. The kid would be in hock for the next 30 generations. Fathers don't want that from their children. They're not interested. That's the nachas that parents have to give, even though they know that the children will never ever be able to pay back. They don't even think about the children paying back. As parents, did anybody here ever think about sending a bill to their children for services rendered, for all you've done for them? It doesn't enter your mind, because that's what parents are. And that's what it means, in kabbonim, in ka'avodim. There has to be a way, and we'll see in a moment what it is. There has to be a way to exit from the business relationship with Hashem, the give and take, the buy and sell, and to enter into another type of relationship. That relationship not of an Eved and an Odoin, of a slave and his master, of a buy and a sell, but But a relationship of a father to a son, of a mother to a daughter, of parents to children. So that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's not Mavater Chas V'Sholom, but he has Rachmanus. That's Kirachem of Albonim. Hashem has Rachmanus on us the way a father has Rachmanus on his children. You want to know what it means the way a father has Rachmanus on his children? The fact that a father never asks the children to pay back, that's Kirachem of Albonim, and it's the type of Rachmanus that you find only by parents' relationship to their children and nowhere else in the world. Doesn't happen by the electric company. You won't find the electric company sending you with their next bill. You know what? Keep the money. You won't find with your local butcher sending you with your next shipment of meat. You know what? What's a shipment of meat between us? It doesn't happen. It's something unique between parents and children. It's a type of beautiful relationship that exists nowhere else in the world except between parents and children. Rachameinu kirachem ov albonim. That's the type of Rachmanus that we need on Rosh Hashanah if we're going to end up anything besides Avadim. If it's not going to be Koinei Avad of Badin, the only way out of that is by setting ourselves up as children. How do we do that? The fact that parents don't mun the children is only half of the beauty of the parent-child relationship. The other half is the way the children act towards the parents. Father and son are walking down King's Highway, and in the corner of the father's eyes, he sees a pair of shoes in a shoe store. And just for a second, he stops, takes a look at them, and says, "Boy, those are nice shoes." That's all he says. Comes home, and the son remembers what his father said. The next week is the father's birthday, so the kid runs to the shoe store and buys his father those pair of shoes. And even if it's not his father's birthday, that's what a son is supposed to do. He knows what his father wants. His father didn't ask him for the pair of shoes. He's certainly not bringing him to court or sending him a bill for the pair of shoes. But that's what children are. That's why children love their parents. They want to make them happy. Children are supposed to want to make the parents happy. They want to make the parents proud of them. Not because the parents are demanding it, but because that's part of the relationship. And we can set ourselves up in relation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu like that as well. There are so many things that we know HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves and has Nachas Ruach from, even if He doesn't demand it of us. What does it cost somebody? Spend an extra few minutes, an extra half hour, an extra whatever on Tosfos Shabbos, on a Motzoi Shabbos. Ibn Ezra in Bereishis says that because Shabbos has a bracha, every second we keep Shabbos, even after the Zman is over, we are the recipients of that bracha. We are in a bracha environment. As opposed to the week, which is Stama Klola environment, Bezeyas HaPecha Toichal Lechem. We know it brings Hashem nachas. Chayiv. Nobody's chayiv. It doesn't say that Bizman Shei Yisroel Makayimim Chiyuvehem or Chiyuvam is Nekroyim Banim. It says Bizman Shei Yisroel Oisin Ritzayin Hashem Mokam. When they do what Hashem wants, they're called children. Hashem is our Father. He created us. We know what He wants. Some things He demands from us for our own benefit. But there are some things that are above and beyond the call of duty that He didn't demand of us. But we know that if we would do it, He would get Nachas Ruach. That's what a child is. That's what a child is to a father. You know what it says in the Sfarim? We all heard this before. That if you do Lifnim Mishuras HaDin, Hashem does Lifnim Mishuras HaDin to you. Now we understand it a little. You set yourself up like a son to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sets himself up like a father. And fathers don't mun back from their children. It doesn't mean that he's mavata on anything. No, chalila. But it means he has rachmonus, kirachem of albonim. That's rachmonus. When we say that Hashem is our Father, this is what it means. The yesod, the foundation, the principle of kol ha-Torah kula, and it's not me saying this, this is Hillel that said this. The principle of kol ha-Torah kula, that one primary nucleus of the entire Torah, is gratitude to Hashem, is repayment to Hashem for everything that He gives us. And Hashem as a Father shows us that our relationship to Him can be much more beautiful, much more beneficial to us, and much more different than just a business relationship. And that's what it means when we say, "Bizman she Yisrael oisin ritzoyna shel makam kriyim banim." When the Jews do Hashem's will, when they do what He wants, they're called children. Hashem doesn't man. But if they don't do what Hashem wants, then Hashem mans. And who's going to pay back? And what does it say in the Gemara? If you have a bills and you can't pay back, kriyim avadim, you get sold. Goymil chasadim tovim v'kainei akoil. It's one of the two. And that's our tefillah, rachameinu kirachem av albonim. And so this Rabbeisai is our role model. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a role model of what a parent should be. And the truth of the matter is that even though it says that Bizman Sheyisrael Ein Oisin Ritzoyna Shel Malkam Kriyim Avodim, Hashem is our Father anyway. It may be Din and not Rachamim, but Hashem is our Father anyway. He created us. And we have children, biological children. And no matter what they do, we are still their parents. And I have to tell you that I deal with so many parents and children. And very often, the children's behavior, or their antics, or their activities, gives the parents so much pain that they just lose sight of the parent-child relationship. It already becomes a business relationship now. Not long ago, I was sitting here in Flatbush, somewhere near in this neighborhood, with one of the Rabbonim here in the neighborhood, with a set of parents, Balabatim of that Rav, to try to beg them and plead with them, with the parents, with the help of their Rav, to let their 15-year-old daughter back into the house. This is a girl who nine and a half months ago, she was sitting in class like any other kid, with the loose leaf, with the graffiti on the front, with the edges a little frayed where the cardboard, the gray sticks out, would go home like any other kid. Parents once changed the locks on her because they didn't like what she was doing. And they were right for not liking what she was doing. She was hanging around with the wrong crowd. She wasn't Machal Shabbos. She wasn't eating treif. She was doing things that the parents didn't approve of. And the parents have a right not to approve. But you know what they did? They figured that by locking the door on her, they'd cause her to bang down the door and beg to come back. It never, ever happens. Never happens. Never ever. 10 out of 10 times, the kid won't break down the door and beg to come back. There are enough places, unfortunately, on the streets of Flatbush and Borough Park and everywhere else in New York City that a 15-year-old girl can live, who is now homeless and is now a dropout from school, that she won't have to come home. And now it's 9 months later. 9 months later. And she's still not home. And the parents don't want her home. And they're sitting there, these parents, and they're telling me, "What did this girl do for us? We bathed her and we clothed her. And we gave her all of these things. And she only gives us grief and aggravation and agmas nefesh." And these parents are talking out of pain. They lost sight of what parents are. I think it was one of the Chachmei Umos HaOlam that once said that there's more hano to to give somebody something than there is to get something. And that's not always true. But where parents are concerned, it is. And Baruch Hashem, very few parents act the way this pair did. Thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for them, and their children should thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for their parents that don't do such things. But even so, the fundamental principle of a parent is, and we're using Hashem as the role model, parents are people that give and get hanoah from the giving. And we can never ever lose sight of the fact that yes, we do want and we expect and sometimes even demand of our children that they do the right thing. And we want them so much to grow up on the Derech HaYoshar and become as great as possible, even greater than us. There's no question about it. And we would give anything for that. And no matter what they owe us, there's no way they could ever repay. After all this is said and done, however, a parent's hana in this world, a parent's pleasure, and a parent's satisfaction and fulfillment as a parent comes not from the repayment, the services rendered that the children eventually give. It comes from the nachas ruach of seeing what your giving eventually brought about. If the child grows up to be a Talmud Chacham, a Tzaddik, an Erlich, a Yid, whatever, it's your giving that brought this about. Once we lose sight of that and start thinking of this as our children paying us back for what we give them, and we lost all the pleasure of parenthood that we could have had. Igloi milsa Freya. It's all gone. There's a Yetzirah. Different people have different Yetziraharas. There's such a thing as a rich man's Yetzirah, such a thing as a poor man's Yetzirah, such a thing as a Litvisha Yetzirah, a Chassidisha Yetzirah, a Chinese Yetzirah, an American Yetzirah. Different people have different Yetziraharas. And there's such a thing as a parent Yetzirah. A parent Yetzirah is that when they get hurt, start looking at their relationship with their children in terms of, okay, what are they doing for me? And that's bad. That's very bad. And so many times does it happen. What are my children doing for me? I've done so much for them. What are they doing for me? You know what? Once a parent asks that question, then there is no answer. To paraphrase what one of the philosophers once said about Emunah, for someone that has that question, there is no answer. For somebody that doesn't have the question, they don't need the answer. But that's the way it is. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu teaches us as a parent. No parent is perfect, except for one. That's the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. When we look at our children and we give to our children, we should understand that there is no more nachas that parents can get in the world than by giving and giving and giving to their children. And the nachas at the end comes not because children repay, because we don't need them to repay. That's the way it is. I'm going to take questions now from the audience, as is the custom over here, and as we are accustomed, the women can write questions on a slip of paper and pass it up if they like. And the men can simply raise their hands. Questions? Okay, we'll wait for the ladies to write the questions. Just a moment. I should pause that this time. Repeat that, please. Right. That goes back to what I said before, that technically a slave and a child are not mutually exclusive. You could be a child who's also a slave. But Moshe Rabbeinu was a slave in the sense that all of his actions and all of his behavior and every single movement that he made was only for Hashem as opposed to himself. And that's the definition of a slave. But his relationship to Hashem, even though he was a slave, because he wanted to be a slave to Hashem, he was Moshe Rabbeinu, even though he was a slave to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he certainly fulfilled Bizman Shei Yisrael Oysen Ritzayin Hashem Lakim if anybody can. And even though he was a slave to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he was still Kari Ben. He was still considered a son. They're not always mutually exclusive. In other words, there's two ways you can become a slave. The way we've been describing now is like Nimkar B'gnei Vosoi, that you don't pay money, so they sell you as a slave. What happens if you sell yourself as a slave? It's a different story. Not because you can't pay debts. Because you want to be Yenim's slave, because you love Yenim. You're a slave, but it's a different type of slave. There's two types of Avod. Moshe Rabbeinu was the other type of Eved. Is this parent giving a material demonstration of their love, or a more interpersonal one? Intangible one. This is hard to fathom, explain. Okay, I'm glad you brought this up, because there are a lot of parents that do give their children a lot of material things. And because they do that, they think that that communicates to the children their love. It doesn't. The material things show maybe that the parents have a lot of money. They maybe show that the parents feel that they don't have enough time for their kids, so instead of giving them time, they'll give them stuff. Maybe it shows that the parents feel that they would like to buy the children's gratitude and loyalty by giving them things. There are a lot of different reasons why I will give you something. I will give you something as a bribe. If you are my postman and I give you a present in the winter, it's not because I'm celebrating your holiday. It's not even because I like you or because I want to give you a present. If it would be just a present, I would be Oivran Loi Sichonim. Why am I giving it to you? I'm giving it to you because I want you to bring me my mail before 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Does that show I love you? Mm-mm. Now, the postman doesn't expect me to love him. The postman wants his bottle of schnapps. Parents often use material things as a substitute for the real love that they do have, but maybe don't have enough time or skill to be able to communicate. Now, when that happens, children pick it up. We discussed here before, tape number 3, I believe it was, that children are always able to sniff out their parents' real attitudes. What's going on in their hearts, their underlying motivations. Children can sniff that out. Something a lot different to the kid. It's not the money that gives the present its value. It's not the money that gives the present its value. Even an expensive present, psychologically, the reason why a person values a present that he gets, it's because the other person was thinking of him, the other person is willing to spend money on him, willing to go out of their way for him. Like I said, if a father is a big executive of a company and he tells his secretary, you know, these are my kids' birthdays, make sure on the birthdays you go out and buy him a present, send it to them in the mail, sign it from me. It costs the same amount of money as if he would have bought it himself. But to the children, if they know what's going on, it means something totally different. How much are you thinking of the children when you buy that present? Now, if you want to spend money on a child's present and get your message across, the way to do it is to overwhelm him. Overwhelm him. Make it as spectacular and as outrageous as possible. You do this to a depressed child, a child who doesn't think his parents love him. Let his parents throw him a birthday party like he never saw before in his life. It applies not only to children, but to husbands and wives too. I said in shul a while ago that if you buy your wife a present and she opens the present, she opens the little box and takes a look at what's inside, and she says, "Oh, thank you very much. This is a beautiful present." That's not good. You failed. But if she opens the box and says, "Wow, you know you're crazy," then you've been successful. If you want to spend money on a present and make an impression, then what you have to do is you have to outdo yourself. Children today are so, their attention is so grabbed by other things. Their minds are chapped. The media has them by the throat. The Yetzirah, their friends, the chevra on the street has them by the gargle. We have to grab the kids harder than they do. And if you want to give them a present, if it's the money thing that you're looking to spend, then you have to do something spectacular, and you have to do something even outrageous to show that you went out of your way, that you're thinking of the kid, that the kid means so much to you, that you're willing to break your normal pattern for the kid. The point is breaking the normal pattern. The kid has to see an anomaly. The kid has to see something special, because the present is supposed to make the kid think that he's special. Of course, if he's expecting a birthday present or a Hanukkah present or whatever, you have to give it to him, and he'll appreciate it. But that's really not all you can accomplish with that. If by giving a present it communicates a message that you are special, and me, father, I'm not a poet, I can't write you any beautiful, heartful words, I don't know how to do these things, but I do know how to show you that you mean more to me than anything in the world. That's what a potential present has. But if all it does is give over material stuff, money value to the kid, means nothing. Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. Sometimes it backfires. Kids get spoiled, and the kids think that they're entitled to it. The appreciation is missing, and the expectations grow. And the difference between a kid who's going to be spoiled when the parents lavish stuff on them, as opposed to a kid that's going to be appreciative when the parents lavish stuff on them, is what message does this stuff come with? We find children that live in Kenai Nahara, the wealthiest homes, and they're not spoiled. I remember I was speaking to, it was Rabbi David Goldwasser, about the daughters of one of the Balabatim from my old shul who was in his seminary. And I spoke to him assuming that he knew that this girl's family was one of the richest from families around. He didn't. He said, "Really?" He says, they have money? He didn't even know. The girl was such a tachshit. She was no different in her attitude, in her look, in her behavior, in her dress than anybody else. He thought that she came from a typical yeshivish, middle class, average, everyday family. There wasn't any shum remez, not one drop of being spoiled in this girl. He was shocked. There are people like that. Then there are kids whose parents aren't nearly as wealthy, but they're spoiled brats. Pashut karet. What's the difference? Doesn't depend upon the amount that you give to the children, although that obviously has something to do with it. But that's certainly not the deciding factor. It has to do with the message you give them when you give them the stuff. If the message is, "I'm giving you this because you're special to me," I'm going out of my way for you. You mean something to me. This is merely an expression of my love. You can't spoil a kid by overdosing him with love. And if all the materialism is just an expression of that love, the child will not be spoiled. Now, it depends what you give him. Children have to learn to fend for themselves, and we can't give them crutches. But I'm talking just about the being spoiled. But if when you give them the material things, the message comes across, A, I'm trying to buy your love. B, I don't have time for you, so I'm giving you money instead. That the money has value. It's the money that has value. It's not my love that I'm trying to convey. I'm trying to give you stuff. First father says, I'm trying to show you how special you are to me. I'm not trying to give you stuff. I'm just not a great poet. This is the only way I know how to do it. I worked hard for my money. I want to give you something. It's for you. Enjoy it. The other father says, I want to give you stuff. That's my value system. I want to give you material things. That child's in trouble. The second one's in trouble. If all the material things in the world were batel b'shishim, they were just overwhelmed, drowned in the love and affection and the expression of affection that the father had for the child when the father gave over this gift, and the price tag really isn't what the child ends up valuing. Because the price tag is batel b'shishim. It's the love and the affection that the child ends up valuing. The present, no matter how expensive it is only a keli, it's only a vessel. It's only an expression, an application of this love. If you give the kid a present, and the value that you put on it is indeed the price tag, and the message is, here's stuff for you, child is going to learn to value the stuff. Everything is attitude. Mamish, everything is attitude. Very often parents ask me, should I do this? Should I do that? Should I be strict? Should I be lenient? The truth of the matter is, yeah, actions count. Parents can make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. But there are strict parents who have good children, and there are strict parents whose children go the wrong way. There are lenient parents whose children grow up to be great tzaddikim, and there are lenient parents whose children grow up the wrong way, and everything in between. It's not so much the what you do, although there is a lot of what you do, but much more than the actions is the attitude that the parents have to the children. It's the attitude with which everything is done. If the parents have the wrong attitude, for instance, like tonight, if the parents' attitude is, okay, I give you something, you give me back. I give you, now you have to give me. No matter what those parents do, even if they do everything by the book, it's not the same as when children know that the parents just are lavishing love and affection on them because the parents value the children. Because that's what a natural parent-child relationship is. It's the attitude. Parents can do everything by the book, but if inside they have the wrong attitude, it's not going to work. I was sitting with a mother in my office, a mother and a father, and I was explaining to the mother about how when she gives musa to the daughter, it was a 15-year-old girl, it's just her birthday, just 15, how she should express to the girl that she understands the difference between the girl being bad as opposed to the thing that the girl did being bad. You're not bad, what you did was bad. Right? So you know what the mother tells me? But the girl is bad. It's not the thing she do, she's bad. I can't stand to look at her, this mother says. The girl is bad. Since I don't tell her that, but that's what I think, the girl is bad. So I told her that, I asked her, why wouldn't you tell her this? I said, what are you crazy? I'm going to tell my daughter that I can't stand her, that I think she's a bad intrinsically, be'etzem bad. It's ridiculous, it'll backfire. I said, you know what? You don't have to tell her. She knows you think that. You don't have to tell her. Children sniff out parents' attitudes, whether parents are explicit or implicit. The children figure it out. It's expressed in every word. It's expressed in every tone of voice. It's expressed in every hand movement, in every walk, in every talk, in every blink of the eye, what parents think. Children decipher their parents' true attitudes towards them. And the main thing, if anything else, for a parent to raise or to bring up loving, wholesome, healthy children, the main thing is it has to be a loving, wholesome, healthy home. It could be poor, it could be rich, it could be strict, it could be lenient. It could be more frum, it could be less frum. And I'm not talking about frumkeit now, I'm talking about parent-child relationship. If it's a loving, wholesome, healthy home, it's going to generate loving, wholesome, healthy children. It's not totally, it doesn't depend as much on should I make this move, should I make that move, should I do this, should I do that, should the curfew be 10 o'clock or 12 o'clock or 2 o'clock on a Matzah Shabbos on a Sunday night. This is all secondary. Not that it's unimportant, not that it just all goes out the window, but it's secondary. Without the right attitude, without the right relationship between the parent and the child, all the right moves in the world aren't going to help anybody. Anything else? Yeah. How does a parent get a child to respect him? Okay, the first step is to figure out what caused the problem in the first place. There are parents whose actions are such that makes it impossible for the children to respect them. There are do as I see and not as I do parents who, let's say, tell their children that they have to learn and go to night seder, but the parent, the child never sees the father open up a Gemara. There are parents who tell the child to listen to the Rebbe, but when the Rav in Shul says, don't talk, he sees the father in the back, when the Rav has his back turned, talking to the neighbor. Such a parent is going to have a hard time. There are other cases where a child doesn't feel that the parent respects him. I heard from a tape somebody sent me, Rosh Hashiva in Eretz Yisrael, that also deals with, they're called in Eretz Yisrael Noshrim, the fallout. Rav Jacobson, his name is, that the yesod of chinuch, of getting a child to respect his father, is to treat your child as you would a regular person. The main odom lechaveroi of a child is like a regular person. If a father makes a mistake and the child knows it, the father is in error, he should say, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. I remember once, and it's hard sometimes. I remember once I had a maisa with my son, a 10-year-old son, where I had an old car that broke down. It died. Goodbye. Nifter. May have yes from Shanos. Goodbye. But I left it in my driveway because the radio and the speakers were very good, and I wanted to have it put into the new car. But I never got a chance, and was sitting there for mamish kemat a year. And then came the day, it was this summer grada where we had time, and I said, all right, I'm not going to wait for anybody to do this, I'm going to just rip out these things myself, and I'm going to bring it to the repairman, and he's going to put it in. And this car was sitting there for like almost a year, and I took off just for these little speakers, for this little radio, and I took off the covers to the speakers in the front, and there was like this little paper with a little plastic thing sticking up on top with a little aluminum foil bubble, and my son stuck his finger in the aluminum foil bubble, and it got scrunched in, never to return. Now this, don't forget, if one speaker is gone, the other one's worthless. Can't buy one speaker. And I had this car sitting in my driveway, taking up a good parking space for almost a year, just for these little speakers in the front. And in 5 seconds, he just like touched it. It's a very delicate thing. Boom, it was in. My momish got upset. Now, I neglected to tell him that these speakers are metama b'mega. You're not allowed to touch them. That they're very sensitive. And I got a little angry, and I got upset, and I told him, why did you touch it, and this and that, you know. Then afterwards I called him over, I said, Yeruchimol, I made a mistake. I said, I'm sorry. I told him the story, I said, I left the thing in the driveway for almost a year just for these things, and it was ruined, and it was a very big, it was a traumatic experience for me, as silly as it sounds. And I should not have taken it out on you. It was my fault, I'm sorry, I asked him, are you moichel me? I should not have yelled at you, because I did not tell you. There's no way that you should know that what you were doing, you did something wrong. I asked him, are you moichel me? And he said, yeah, he is. We all make mistakes. But we have to treat our children as if they would be regular menschen, because they are menschen. There's a Tshuvas HaRambam about a Rebbe who in a shir insulted, I think it was Arabs, I think he said, even though they're not, and there was like a ger, I believe. I'm not 100% sure of the exact question of the Shaila. It was something to this effect. He offended one of the Talmidim in the shir by accident. And the Shaila is, does the Rebbe have to ask Machil of a Talmud? And the Rambam says, of course the Rebbe has to ask a Talmud Mechila. If he did something wrong, he has to ask a Mechila. I know a lot of parents, a lot of Rebbeim won't do that because they figure that the child will lose respect. But it's not true. It's so not true. If what? If the child sees that the father did something wrong and doesn't want to admit it, the child's going to gain respect. You know what it is? There's a language problem here. Kavod in English can mean two things. Kavod means respect, but kavod also means honor. If I stand up for you because you walk in, that's honor I give you. But that doesn't mean I respect you. Respect is an attitude. I can bring you your shoes and polish them because I'm your slave and it's my duty to honor you. But I don't have any respect for you whatsoever. I think the lowest of you in the world. But kavod, kabed es avicha v'yasimecha, can be translated two ways. You're machabed somebody. It doesn't mean you respect him. It means you honor him. If you give somebody benching, it doesn't mean you're machabed him. What does it mean you're machabed him? It means you honor him. It's an honor to have benching. But kavod also means respect. And sometimes it gets lost in the translation. And sometimes we force our children to honor us. Like when we don't ask mechila, we feel that we're losing our honor. It's like a bazillion. Listen, it is a bazillion to ask mechila from a 10-year-old. But what you lose in honor, you gain tenfold in respect. And the respect is more valuable a million times than the honor. And when we think, kaved es avicha v'yasimecha, you see, the children have chiyuvim to honor the parents. In Shulchan Aruch, it only discusses honor. Because you can't command somebody to respect your parents. You either do or you don't. They say respect can be commanded, but it can't be demanded. You can't command somebody respect your parents. You can say honor your parents. Don't talk back. If your father instigates the confrontation, it says in Shulchan Aruch, comes from a Gemara in Kedushin, your father instigates the confrontation, he did something unreasonable. He slapped your money into the ocean or something. You're not allowed to be disrespectful. Meaning you're not allowed to be chutzpedik. Fine. That means treat him with respect, treat him nicely. It's the way you treat him. But your attitude towards him, does it say that the child has to think the father was right for doing that? Does it say that the child can't in his mind think, boy, my father is a jerk? No, he's a jerk, but I won't say anything because the Torah says, kaved es avicha v'yasimecha, even if he's a jerk. And he fulfilled his mitzvah. Respect has to come from the parents have to generate that. The child can supply the honor, but the parents have to plant the seeds for the respect. The yisod is if you treat the children respectfully and fairly, unless there's some problem, they will end up respecting the parents too. But it has to be, you have to, the yisod is that the bein adam l'chaveiro to a child applies like anybody else. You know, we there's an issur to hit somebody. There's an issur d'oraisa, you're not allowed to hit somebody. Now, parents obviously are allowed to hit their children, but only if it's justified. Only if it's for chinuch reasons. For father stam to hit his kid, there's no heter, there's no blanket heter for father to hit his child. There's a heter for chinuch, for father to hit his child, to be madrichim. When that's really the motive, and when that's really the purpose of his hitting. But if a father just gets annoyed with a kid and he knows that the slap is not going to have any chinuch value, he's ironic, it's a deraisa. It's like a Rebbe in a Talmud. A Rebbe meets his Talmud, let's say, outside of yeshiva, and he wants the kid's parking space, so he gives him a slap in the face, give me your parking space. It's Iran and Isser. It has nothing to do with his Rebbe-Talmud relationship. And same thing with a father and a son. It's not the relationship between the father and the son. I mean, meaning, not the biological relationship. Not the fact that he's your son that allows you to hit him. It's the fact that you have chinuch obligations that allow you to hit him. But beyond the chinuch obligations, you're like everybody else. We have to treat our children with respect. If we're wrong, we have to admit we're wrong. If we're right, we insist that we're right. We should let them see us cry for them. We should let them see us laugh with them. We have to treat them like menschen. And I don't mean strict as opposed to liberal, as opposed to lenient, as opposed to... That's not what I'm talking about. You can be the strictest parent in the world, but with a cheshbon, with respect. When a kid sees that you respect him, he's usually going to respect you back. That's usually the way it works. Now, of course, I can't diagnose a case without knowing anything about it. But generally, this is the rule. What do you mean by write off? You want to know if a parent should lose hope? Is that the question?
Are they ever justified?
In losing hope? I'm just asking you to define that to help me answer the question a little.
Writing off meaning that they say, I don't care about the child, they should
send it themselves. No. If you're talking about throwing a child out of a house, the fact is that the children that went off the derech, from those that came back, there is a tremendous, tremendous, tremendously disproportionate amount of those that did tshuva from the ones that were not thrown out of the house, the ones whose parents stuck by them through thick and thin. If there's one factor in the kids that came back, it's that almost across the board parents stuck by them thick and thin. It's no guarantee. But if they do, it's more than anything, more than any other factor, it's probably worth more than anything else. If the only havamina, the only time even to ask the shaila, is if the child is ruining other kids in the house. The child is ruining other kids in the house, so then there's a question already. How much are they ruining them? What can be? Is there any other way? Then it's a shaila. Without that, I see absolutely no reason and no justification for a parent to do that. Now, to lose hope, it's unrealistic also. Because whatever, if you know a parent that lost hope, send them to me. I'll show them kids that were worse than their kids that came back. That were worse that came back. No matter how bad the kid is. Kids are worse. Members of chain motorcycle gangs that are now with beards and hats. And I said once, there's a pasuk like that in Bahaloischa, where by the Asafsuf, where they made unreasonable demands on Moshe Rabbeinu and they wanted him to have meat in the desert. What kind of Meshuggah people are these? Meat in the desert? What do they want from him? The people in the desert were really unreasonable to him. They wanted to stone him. They wanted to... So Moshe Rabbeinu turns up to Shemayim and he says, Hashem, what did I do? Why don't you like me? Ha'anoichi harisi oisam. Did I give birth to them? But if I would have given birth to them, I would have to tolerate all of this. I can't write them off. That's what he's saying. He's saying, Rabbeinu Shalom, Hashem, what do you want from me? Am I their father that I have to take this? But if I was their father, he'd have to take it. That's what he's saying. It's not easy. But that's a parent's job. Listen, you know what people do to make parnasa? If you'd count how many hours a day, how much grief and aggravation, how much koichas people put into making a living, over money. If they put that amount of effort into their children, wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and go to Minyan early so you can get on the train and be there on time and work hard, and even have a boss who you can't stand, but you're soivel that you tolerate it anyway because of the money, right? And you tolerate the crowds and the trains and the boss, and you tolerate the hours and the fact that you don't come home and you don't see your wife, and when you do come home, you're knocked out and you're in bed right away, and it makes you sick and you get ulcers from it, but you take all of this because of money. We can't ask at least that much for your children? You can write off your boss and write off the subway and say, I don't have to deal with this subway anymore. I don't have to deal with my boss anymore. I don't have to deal with this whole Parnassa thing anymore. That would rather make sense. I mean, it's crazy what we do, right? But we don't do it because once the money comes in, we see it's all worth it. I think our children are worth at least that much. If the parents are not respectable people, how could you get the child to respect the parents? Unless the parent is willing to cooperate and to say, look, you know, we both made a lot of mistakes, our relationship is all messed up, maybe we can turn over a new leaf, or something like that, can't be done. The parents aren't respectable people and they are not willing to change that, then you can get the children to say, well, look, you know, my parents, they're still my parents, and I'm not allowed to hit them over the head, and I have to fulfill kibud av va'eim, and I still owe them. They brought me into this world, they gave me room and board, and they gave me food, and for that, you know, they get my respect to a certain degree. But that they should really respect them in the sense that they use the parents as role models and guides, it can't be done. And you know what? Not always should it be done. Because what happens is that the kids end up blaming themselves. If the parents and the kids don't get along, and let's say the parents, and we're talking, let's say, an extreme case, let's say abusive parents, right? So if the child respects the parents, just like regular children respect the parents, and admires the parents, how does the child in his mind explain all the abuse that he suffered throughout the year? Terrence says, it's my fault, meaning the kid's fault. It's the only alternative. Either the child comes to grips with the fact, yes, there's something wrong with my parents. Maybe it's their fault, maybe they're never sick, maybe whatever the pshat is. He comes to grips with that, or, no, my parents are wonderful people, I respect them, they're my role models. So why do they do this? There's only one other alternative, and that's that I deserve it, it's my fault. And that's a very big problem. A very big problem. I mean, I have kids I've been dealing with, let's say that were really from abusive parents, and let's say, I know one case where Ohel put them in foster care. Right? And the parents are still screaming at the kid, no, we had a right to beat you up all the time, and etc., etc., etc. Now, how's this kid, who was a girl grada, how's this kid supposed to grow up? What is her hashkafa supposed to be? How's she supposed to perceive this? Yes, you did have a right for everything you did, and yes, or no, you didn't have a right, you were wrong. Yes, you're still my father, you're still my mother, but you were very, very wrong. It's the only alternative. It's very damaging. Parents can make or break a kid. Wonderful parents could be the best thing in the world for a kid. But damaging parents is the worst. I said it a number of times and I'll say it again. Over 80, 90 percent of the kids that I've dealt with, and this my computer tells me, come from homes where they don't get along with the parents. People think that it's in the yeshiva problem, whatever. Sometimes that's the case. But much, much more often than that, there's a problem in the home. I don't have any number for you on that. Very often, the parents are having problems with each other. Very often, it'll be like one parent more than another, but the second parent is going to be torn between the child and the spouse. And it's a very tough position for a parent to be in, to be torn between her husband or his wife and the child. I know one family where parents broke up over the issue about how to deal with the child. Father and a mother, the mother was more, there's a child who was, he's not frum. The mother was more encouraging and more willing to, you know, continue and try things, and the father was writing him off. Father left. It's like one situation is gereres, another situation. If you have a kid that doesn't get along with one parent, then already you have the other parent is stuck as a problem. Then the shalom bayis is no good. If the shalom bayis is no good with the parents, that's worse for the kid. The kid grows up in a house where they throw pots at each other. The problem is that's a vicious cycle. He's the cause and he's the effect. And the parents shalom bayis are the cause and the parents shalom bayis are the effect. And one thing leads to another, and before you know it, the whole house is a mess. And who knows what can happen. And that's really, it sounds like a cartoon. But that's really the story of what happens in these cases. The whole house is a circus. And it all starts in one little place. I saw one of the Mefarshim say, and then we'll wrap it up because it's Taka a couple minutes before 10. I saw one of the Mefarshim say on the Gemara by Kamsa bar Kamsa that the lesson of the Gemara is not Stam Sin Aschinam. The lesson of the Gemara is that such a silly little thing, like a guy invited the wrong person, over some silly little thing, a whole Beis HaMikdash could be destroyed. Like the Gemara says over there, because of a chicken, so Turmalka was destroyed. And because of a strap of leather, Beitar was destroyed. The point of the Gemara is that little things, little shtusim, a little shtus it was. One little, some silly little guy with a bar kamsa and a kamsa, somebody got invited to the wrong meal. Probably 90% of the Yidden never heard not of kamsa, not of bar kamsa. One silly little thing destroyed a Beis HaMikdash. So the lesson is, you see how silly little things can snowball and become tragedies.